Welcome to the X-Cast, X-Files Podwatch, episode 10, covering Miracle Man and Shapes. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and with me is Brandon Shea Mattella. What's up, Brandon?
Mulder!
Yes. Brandon and I are for Star Trek buddies. We're over on the Trek FM network, and we found our way over to the X-Cast. And, you know, we've never had a chance to talk X-Files on the airwaves, so to speak, have we, Brandon?
No, and we're taking it over. Like, we're infesting the network like the black oil.
Yes, okay, people now know that Brandon has X-Files cred. you know, we're talking about two episodes today, Miracle Man and Shapes. Brandon and I have gone back and forth on social media quite a bit about Shapes, so I'm looking forward to getting into that one. But before
awesome.
We get there, it's something. But before we get there, the first episode we're talking about today is Miracle Man, and that aired on March 18th, 1994. It was written by Chris Carter and Howard Gordon and directed by Michael Lange, or Lange. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. So, Brandon, what are your first impressions of Miracle Man here?
I think it's one of the more mediocre elements of the first season. It's not terrible, but it's not great. It doesn't really work. I think there's some interesting aspects to it. Like, I like the idea of this story of this faith healer who actually seems to really be healing people. The whole resolution of it doesn't really work for me in that it turns out to be, like, their driver who's poisoning the people and all this. And I don't know, like, that end of it doesn't really work. But one part of the episode that I find really fascinating when I watch it is this whole little subplot that's going on with Mulder's sister.
Yeah, see, I feel like this is a symptom of season one of the X-Files. I hadn't really mapped out exactly how big a role Samantha would play, what her feature is. So they're just trying to, like, shoehorn that motivation into every single situation. They always come back to that because that's all they know at this point. So I don't know. I felt like the sister thing was very out of place and felt very odd.
See, that's the thing about something like this. Like, when you get to season one of the X-Files, like I said, I think season one of the X-Files is my favorite season of the X-Files because they really hadn't had a formula yet, so they were really pushing the boundaries and doing just about everything that they could and really, you know, trying new things all the time. And yes, in hindsight, this does feel weird once we know about Mulder's story and Mulder's sister and what happens with it, like we find out later on. But at the time, when you watch it as a rewatch, if you're watching it for the first time, I think it's a really interesting storyline because we don't exactly know where it's going to go with Mulder's sister. So it's that weird place where I like it a lot, but yes, it doesn't fit when you look back on it. Does that make sense?
But yeah, it's a blank canvas at this point, and they're just trying stuff out. I totally get you there. You know, we're both people of faith, Brandon. So I find whenever they portray things like this and fiction, I get a little uneasy because I don't know how they're going to do it. But I felt, you know, they handled it very well here, and the televangelist, if you want to call him that, is pretty well captured and spot on to, you know, it was a big thing in the 80s and early 90s. It's kind of waned out now, but that whole persona and pomp and circumstance that going around that whole, you know, tent, revival tent was pretty spot on, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they really captivated the feel of a revival. And one of the things that's really awesome about early X-Files especially, and I don't know, it's been a long time since I've seen the later seasons, but as I've been following along with my early episode rewatch here, I don't know if it's because it's in Vancouver and because of the casting directors they had there. I'm not sure if these casting directors followed them to LA or not. I'm guessing they probably didn't. But I love the casting that's done in Canada, you know, and just the people that they get and the people that are in that audience of this revival. To me, they fit the bill perfectly, you know, and as we're going to talk about in other episodes later on, like just some of the character actors that they get are just wonderful. They're just average people, and it adds character to the show.
Well, right. It's before everything was so slick and perfect. You know, Mulder and Scully's outfits didn't quite look so GQ, right? I mean, there's just a sense of authenticity. I mean, these are government agents driving these, you know, POS cars and wearing these clothes. And I get to that real world flavor. Now, to be fair, listeners, Brandon is from Canada, so I think he's a little biased as to his favorite... That's to his favorite part of the X-Files. But yeah, there is a definite shift in the overall feel of the show once it moves to LA after season 5, for sure. So what did you think? Like, did Samuel really heal people in this episode and he rise from the dead? I mean, Scully seems to discount everything pretty unfairly, but that's where she is at this phase of the series.
Exactly, yeah. Now, as I watch the story, as far as the story itself is concerned, I like to believe that the character was healing these people in the story itself. that's just the type of story that I think that they were going for. The X-Files didn't fear to touch on religion and God and stuff. And as Scully's character grew, you know, they explored her faith a little bit more as the series went along, right? So I think they're just playing up the skeptic card this early in the game, right?
Right.
But I like to think that when I watch this episode that he was healing the people, and that's part of the unexplained element of the episode. Now, at the church I go to, there's a guy who thinks he's a faith healer. Like, I've never seen it, right? He's taken videos of himself, and he's like put his hands on people, and then afterwards he interviews them, and he's like, is your pain gone and whatnot? And they say yes. And you know, part of me doubts. I have doubt about something like this, right? Even as a man of faith. Because it's the same thing where, I don't want to get on too much of a tangent here, but where, you know, people, they tell these stories of they have somebody break down and cry in front of them, and then they confess themselves to the Lord, and, you know, everybody in the church stands up and applauds. They're like, yay, we got another person. But it's like, you never hear any follow-up on these people. How long did that last in their life? How long did they stay faithful after that? And it's like this, well, how long did that pain go away? Was their pain gone? Because, you know, I do believe that psychologically you can heal yourself and you make yourself sick or you can make yourself feel better. So when you go to a faith healer, is part of it yourself and it's your own mentality that's helping your body heal itself?
Yeah, placebo almost.
Yeah, so... But after the fact, you go back to them next week, are they hurting again? You know, like, I don't know. So it's interesting, and it's an aspect of my faith that I don't necessarily believe in. But as far as the episode itself is concerned, I believe that that's what they were going for in the episode.
Yeah, I've never, same as you, I've never felt like, you know, people tell stories that you hear like, oh, I was at the pit, I was at the bottom, I was going to just end everything, but then I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I turned around, but no one was there. And, you know, I've never felt that
right.
Manifest itself in physical ways, but, you know, clearly people do. So, but bottom line, I think this episode actually, you know, it towed that line pretty well. It wasn't like, because some shows would just write everything off, but hey, this is the X-Files, so they always have an open mind. So I found it interesting. Last point I'll make about this episode, this is a very striking cold open, because you see this, a corpse, basically, in a body bag, heavily burned. We don't see the whole body, but we just see the arm. And, you know, this is our first example of what Samuel can do, his power. And the corpse reaches up, and it's like a big shock. And that is the first thing I remember about watching the X-Files when I was a little kid. That scene is the first scene I remember. I didn't know what it was at the time or anything like that, but that it hooks you. All right, our second episode, our highly anticipated discussion here on Shapes with me and Brennan. Shapes aired on April 1st, 1994, an April Fool's Day joke indeed. It was written by Marilyn Osborne and directed by David Nutter, who's gone on to direct a lot of television, a great director. And I will say, for all the negative things to say about this episode, I do think it's very well directed by David Nutter. It has a bit of an atmosphere to it, which is positive. Even the beginning of the episode where we see the lightning and the taxidermized animals and all that, it does create a good spooky or creepy ambiance.
Right.
And that's the only positive thing I'll say.
That's what I love about it. I love it. It's spooky. It's creepy. It's dark. It's awesome. Now, okay, so I listened to your guys' episode on it, and I know that you don't like this episode. And honestly, the one thing that I have trouble with the episode that I think is silly, that you guys didn't even pick up on, and I'm going to mention it here, okay, because I don't think this is a perfect episode, but I really, really, truly love watching this episode, okay? The fact is, when Mulder and Scully go to investigate this, right, and they go into that bar... And the guy's like, hey, I can smell your FBI aftershave, whatever he says, right? The fact that the dead guy's sister's in there playing pool? Like, you guys didn't mention that. And to me, that's like, why is she playing pool when her brother just got murdered? Like, wasn't she not grieving? Do you grieve by playing pool? I don't know.
That's how she copes, I guess.
She copes by, like, sharking people for money, I guess. I
had so much else to complain about that episode, Brandon, that escaped. But this episode, look, every season gets a stinker. It's a louder stinker. And I believe this is the one for season one. Some people say Shapes. This is Shapes. Some people say Space, excuse me. I actually kind of like Space because of the NASA connection. I'm a big NASA guy. So I'm much like Mulder, I want to be an astronaut. So that kind of hooked me into that episode. This one, it just seems that the X-Files gets a lot better about this as it dives more into Native American, you know, mythology as the series progresses. But in early X-Files, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of cliche science fiction where Native American stuff it just seems to be impossible to portray it without cliches. The funeral ceremony and all that, it's just very, to me, it's very stereotypical.
See, I don't know. So I'm kind of confused on that. So I listened to a podcast recently, and they talked about Aboriginal portrayal in, like, certain things, right? And, like, I'm from Canada. I've lived in Northern Canada, right? So I've been exposed to a lot of Aboriginal people, and I see that this is not a lot of the culture that's there, right? And I understand that. I lived up in a little town called Pinehouse Lake, Saskatchewan, and La Ronge, Saskatchewan. But a lot of people think that, oh, the white man likes to watch these stories, and they like to portray Aboriginal people as these, what's the term, like, not technologically advanced, like one with nature and stuff, because they're incapable of comprehending technology and stuff, so that they stay in this what's the term I'm looking for, this
arrested development,
yeah, an arrested development kind of state and stuff. And for me, it's not that. What I see and what I like about the portrayal of Aboriginal culture, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, like, this is my opinion, this is how I feel, and this is what I get out of these episodes, this is what I get out of the Paradise Syndrome in Star Trek, you know, is I think that the Aboriginal people have got it right in these portrayals, because I'm sometimes overwhelmed by technology, and I'm overwhelmed by the world, and how crazy our society is, and how connected everything is, and I often want to live a life of, like, less. And so I see this portrayal of this culture of people who are one with nature, and I like that portrayal, and that's what I get out of it. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm just a white man that doesn't know any better, I don't know, but that's what I get out of the culture. And so they go up to this culture of people who know more about nature than the white people do, because they're closer to nature. They know about this story of this werewolf man and stuff like this. And I don't know, like, I like that story a lot. I like the actors that are in it. I mean, the main chief in this is the police officer in it. You know, he was on later on Twin Peaks and stuff. You know, I like him as an actor. And I don't know, I just, the stuff that you guys put it down for, I see it, but it doesn't bother me the way that it bothers you guys. I really, truly like this episode.
Brandon always has an appreciation for any fandom he's involved in, so I respect him for that. But, you know, he has some interesting Star Trek taste as well. But I'll say this, the two major things about this episode that I, you know, if you heard my episode with Tony about it on the X-Cast, you know this, but to me, the characters are behind the eight ball on this. Mulder goes into this knowing there's a werewolf situation, right? It's the first of all, it's the first X-File, which was kind of lame. They kind of retconned that
later.
I like
that.
But this, of all the things, this is the first X-File. But they, you know, later on, they kind of finagle around that. He knows what to expect going into this. So anyone who knows anything about werewolves is, if you get bitten by one or scratched by one or anything, you become a werewolf. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they know the farmer's son got, you know, attacked or whatever, they should be like, oh, we need to look into this. This could be a werewolf situation. But nobody ever does. And they're just so behind the whole time. You're just waiting for them to finally catch up and figure out what you know from the opening scene. And that annoys me so much. And then the worst, this might be the worst case of Scully just being oblivious. Because, like, she knows what's his name is in the bathroom. There's a ruckus going on. The door flies open. She sees nothing. And then later on, she tells the Mulder, like, oh, must have been the cougar. I don't know what happened. He was in there and something attacked. It's like, open your eyes, Scully. You know, it's just so frustrating. You know, because they're both of them, Mulder and Scully, are smarter than this. They should have been on top of this situation. And just to see them so behind just for the sake of telling the story just really frustrated me as a viewer.
I see everything you're talking about. Just for some reason, it just doesn't bother me. I agree. I understand exactly what you're saying. Like, you're sitting there like, obviously this is a werewolf, but I'm just going along with the story. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
It's also one that they could have done a sequel to. They're like, oh, see in about 9 years, FBI. But, you know, it's been too long now. I guess they can't really bring it back for season 11.
Yeah, they would never bring anything back like 25 years later.
Of course not. Do they ever do another real werewolf story?
I don't think so.
I mean, they do vampires and, you know, of course, ghosts are here and there throughout the whole show, but it's something worth doing again, I would think. Just do it right, you know? I mean, much like, you know, if you look at, we're going to bring back the Star Trek comparisons, but you look at, you know, episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, like the first couple seasons where maybe they had a good idea, but it kind of failed, but they bring it back, the concept later on, and they do it better. Like, I feel like if the X-Files would have been like, you know what? The werewolf story was kind of a miss. Let's do it again. But better this time. So I wish they would have maybe revisited it just for that. Maybe, and they could have salvaged this you know, along the way. That's just my take on it.
I will tell you that I did love this episode so much that I did write a fan fiction about an X-Files werewolf story. I don't know where it is. It's gone. I just remember that I just wrote a werewolf one.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's amazing, Brandon. Now it all makes
teenage
sense.
Teenage Brandon. Werewolves.
Well, if you ever find it, you should submit it to these X-Files anthologies that are going on.
Excellent. I actually have a really good idea for one, but I'm not going to tell anybody online here because they'll take
my
yourself.
Idea. They'll take your idea, exactly.
It's a sequel to Shapes.
All right, well, that's been fun talking about these episodes today. So, Brandon, if people want to find you on social media and talk to you about how awesome Shapes is, where can they find you?
You can find me at my Twitter handle of I Love the Episode Shapes. You can find me on my personal Facebook page of shapesisawesome.com. No, I'm just kidding. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Mutala. That's BrandonMutala. I host two shows over on the Trek FM network. One's called Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek. And I co-host Warp 5 with my friend Floyd, which is all about Star Trek Enterprise. And over on the Fandom Podcast Network, I've got a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast that I do with my friends Tom and Chris. And those are a lot of fun. And Zach, where can people find you when you're not healing sick people?
Well, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show from the 2000s. We're on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. And like Brandon, I too am a host of a show on Trek FM, Standard Orbit, the original series podcast. We talk about the original series, the original series movies, the Kelvin timeline movies, anything to do with Captain Kirk and his adventures on the Enterprise. We talk about it over there at Trek FM. So we're one big happy fleet over there. As for the X-Cast, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast and look up our Facebook page and group at the X-Cast X-Files Podcast Fan Group on Facebook. Tomorrow we'll be back with Darkness Falls and Tombs. But until next time, trust no one.
Scully!
Scully!